Look. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Nyack School District Board of Education meeting, Tuesday, December 15th. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Before we start the meeting this evening, I would like us to take a moment of silence in remembrance of the victims of the San Bernardino attack on the 2nd of December. Thank you. I'd like to thank the Upper Nyack PTA for putting on this wonderful holiday spread. It's always a wonderful time of year to come back to Upper Nyack, because it's wonderful. So thank you very much to the PTA for this. I'd like to take this moment to welcome our new board member, Terence Rock, Trustee Rock, who has just joined the board.
Thank you.
And just a couple of items I have. I just want to remind the board that at our last retreat we had talked about setting board goals, and I remember we got quite an enthusiastic response to doing this. So at some point I'm going to suggest that we put an item on the workshop where we can pick this up and progress that, because I think it's important. I think we had a good discussion around it in our retreat, and it's something I'd like us to see to progress. So just wanted to let you know that we'll try to, if everybody's in agreement, that we would put that on a workshop going forward. Is that comfortable? Comfortable with that?
Great. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, good. And last but not least, today I completed my survey, so I wanted to encourage everyone, to the public and everybody. I mean, I'm a parent as well as a board member. It's a very good survey. Our superintendent and our administration have some great plans for this school, and it's important that everyone in our community contributes to that, because as they say, it takes a village, and so we are looking for everybody's feedback. So if you haven't done so yet, I'd encourage you to go fill out the survey. Dr. Montesano.
Yes, on that same note, I think we're up to close to about 30% return rate for a relatively brief period of time. We're pretty pleased with that. And it's designed to end on December 21st, although we are going to evaluate it at that point to see if we have a need for an extension of that, because our aim simply is to try to collect as much feedback from the community at large as we can. So I know it's a tough time, very busy time of the year for everyone. It probably takes about 15 minutes, 20 minutes of time, so we certainly would welcome your feedback. And the only other item I have is really directed to the board to advise you that I met with Carlene, who has been meeting with Land Associates, who's your chief architect for the bond projects. And as you know, we have planned a very busy summer of 2016 with a series of projects, which includes additional athletic fields, some roofing projects, et cetera. Land Associates has been monitoring the progress of our plans that have been submitted to State Ed. As the board is aware, because the district is securing roughly about 37% of most of the projects are being supported with state aid, the state requires that each of those projects are reviewed and approved by the State Department of Education. The problem is that the turnaround time for the engineering plan review, since we have submitted them, the lag time is simply increasing. They're reporting now, it's getting close to almost a full year, 44 to 46 weeks of time for the plans to be turned around. Now, our plans were submitted when we're a little bit under that in terms of the estimates. An additional problem up there is that they don't have any kind of electronic queuing system to be able to tell districts where you are online. Literally, these plans are sitting on shelves with no ability to let you know you're getting close, you're getting warm, it's going to be a while. And that really wreaks havoc on timelines and for planning purposes. And we have a set of projected plans. In order for us to put a shovel in the ground in the summer, we need a series of things to occur prior to that. And as the board is aware, your next step in a process is to put together bid specifications. They have to go out to contractors. You have to allow yourself time in the event that you need to rebid. If you're not getting the pricing you're looking for, once the contractors are on board, the contractors also have submittals in order for them to begin the work process. So all of this is obviously very time consuming. Right now, their best guess estimate is that we may receive first review of our plans from State Ed like mid-May. And if that is the case, we probably would not get final review until early to mid-June. That would make it virtually impossible for us to get the work schedule on time in order to, to hit the ground running for the summertime. Now, it's still possible that we'll be able to, by some miracle, get our plans approved prior to that. So the next step for us, after the new year sometime, we are going to sit down with Land Associates and basically put together some contingency plans. Obviously, we can't be doing roofing projects while kids are in school, so this is one example. So when that can be done, it may, as well as the field itself in terms of the amount of disruption to athletic and phys ed classes and the like. So, one scenario may be that many of these projects may have to be put off to the next cycle, meaning the very next summer. But at this point, it's very difficult to project as to what exactly is going to occur. Simultaneously, there's an advantage to us getting this stuff going, getting the financing in place, because all of us are aware that, the interest rates eventually will have some implications to bond rates and things of that sort. So, everything is being done that can be done to try to move things forward, and we'll certainly keep the board apprised, but I do want to make sure the board is well aware of some of the challenges that we're confronting with the submittal process, review process. And that's my report.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the committee to sign?
Just a question. So the contingency plan time frame, can you give us an idea of
it? To be determined. There's a lot of different moving parts that we have to really kind of review. And mainly, as I said, I use roofing projects as one example that, we certainly have to be able to get roof bids awarded in time for us to be able to do it when the kids are not occupying the schools. I don't recall exactly which school, but I think there's a couple of additional schools that may have boiler replacements. And obviously, when you're doing the summertime, you don't worry about the winter season. So, what can actually be done during the school year versus, the off time? That's why the summertime was an ideal time for us to be able to move forward. So at this point, I don't really think we have a real good handle on what projects can be, can get done and what kind of schedule it might look like.
So just when you found out where we were in the pipeline, you called somebody and they went down.
No, this has been an ongoing monitoring. They've been aware, we've reported to the board previously about even when we first submitted that at the time, if I don't remember the exact amount of weeks, but mm-hmm. we're probably looking at someplace in the 30s. But at that time frame, we would still be in good enough shape you know, based on that projection. What's been happening over time is that more and more districts are submitting plans, and you know, so in addition to that, it's impossible for land to be able to tell us where, you know, exactly where we are in the process as to are we getting close, or you know, are we in front of that big wave they've had that's caused some of this lag. So, you know, there's a lot of unknowns to the process.
Did you want to come? Yeah. He has come. I'm sorry. Dan Jupter.
Dr. Montesano, we had heard earlier that we were the first district to take advantage of the solar program.
Correct.
Does that have any,
the roofs.
Moving of the
yeah,
delay.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I am going where you think I'm going. Does the delay of project completion affect that? Could it affect that, delay that?
Well, if you recall, right now, you know, our original plan was to sign the Case Solar agreement with six buildings. To date, we've only signed on for four buildings, the administrative building and three elementaries. And we've left off the middle school and the high school for the exact reason you're mentioning. Both of those, in order for us to lay those solar panels down, we need to put new roofs on those buildings, which was part of the bond project originally. And a solar, just to be clear, is separate and apart from the bonding. There's no investment from the board's perspective, the community's in perspective. That's through a grant program. So the problem we have, or the challenge we have with the high school and the middle school for solar, is that the grant program expires December of 2016. So we cannot enter an agreement without a clear understanding that we're going to be able to get those roofs in place to be able to meet that December 2016 deadline. So yes, the answer to your question, yes, there are implications for the
perhaps
solar.
One entity in Albany could discuss it with the other entity in Albany and get
us a to help.
Well,
we could persuade them.
You know, as the board is aware, we because we are, you know, the first district to enter the solar agreement, and there is a tentative plan to have a press conference on January 14th. It's possible the governor of New York may be in attendance. If not, certainly are some of our local legislators. It would be an ideal time.
Right.
For any members of the community that are attending that, or any members of the board, may just tug on some of the legislators' coattails and just, you know, see what they can do to move us forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Michael Mark.
My question was the same as Trustee Jupter's, and it has been addressed.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Montesani. Hunter Drasko, our student representative.
Thank you, President Hughes. Although I don't have anything specific to report, I wanted to say thank you to Mr. Makora and Upper Nyack for having us. And I came up through Upper Nyack, and I know Mr. Makora very well from the middle school, so I always like coming back here and getting to see him. And I wanted to wish everybody on the board and everybody else a happy holidays.
And Hunter, I'd like to give a shout out to your parents for raising you the right way.
That was very All right, let's have our Board of Education reports. We'll start with Dan Jupter.
Thank you, President Hughes.
You're welcome.
I don't have anything to report. I'd like to thank Principal Nakora and the Upper Nyack staff and Upper Nyack PTA for hosting us. It's always nice to stop in here. I'd like to wish those that worshipped Happy Hanukkah fast, and wish everyone a Merry Christmas, and wish everyone a peaceful, bountiful, and very happy New Year. Thank you.
Trustee Irvin.
Oh, click, click. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you to Upper Nyack for hosting us. I mean, I was just telling Terrence, our new board member, there's a competition among the schools when they host these events and like the spread they put out for us. So we get to enjoy this tonight, and thank you. And I just want to say thank you also for allowing us to push this meeting up a half an hour. Karen and I were able to attend the middle school concert. And I will say that I am extremely impressed with the music program up there. That new guy, Brendan Lucas, did a great job with the band. And, you know, the orchestra and the chorus are on, they were great last year, they're great again this year, but I'm really pleased to see that the kids are up there and really seem to be enjoying that. It was a good concert. I'm glad I was able to go, and thank you for your patience in adjourning this half an hour for us to be able to attend that. Mm-hmm. I attended the Rockland County School Board Association meeting last night, along with a couple of my colleagues. We were doing some training concerning mandatory reporting for board members on when we see children in an educational setting suffering some type of abuse. All right, so in addition to that, we're going to have some additional information for our fellow board members to give you some potential training with respect to that. Ralph, I'm sure you're familiar with all of this, but apparently if we do that training, we're entitled to qualified immunity when we do report instances, regardless of the outcome. So it's probably worth it for us all to engage in that. We'll get you that information because we're going to try to create some kind of online process for those who couldn't attend last night. And I do want to also remind the board members that the legislative breakfast that we have every year with and you, Dr. Montesano, with our legislators is on January 23rd. I'll give you more details about that coming up, but that's always well attended, and it's an opportunity for us to meet with the legislators and talk about educational agendas. There's a lot of stuff happening. There's the No Child Left Behind ESSA legislation that is percolating and soon to be passed. It's going to have implications for the federal government stepping back somewhat and allowing the states more control over its education, but we still have a lot of issues confronting the community that we would like Albany to address, and that's an important meeting. So please put that on your calendars and try to attend. And I just also want to reiterate Trustee Jechter's greetings for the holidays. I hope you all had a great Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I'm looking forward to a bit of a break, and I hope you all have wonderful holidays. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Leah. And on that note, we'll go to Trustee Marshall to continue that discussion on the training.
Thanks. Yes, thank you, President Hughes. I, again, along with the rest of the board, thank you to Mr. McCrory and your team, and to Maria Sherry and Gen Connect and the PTA volunteers for this amazing spread. I always feel like we're coming to a red carpet event when we come to Abenaya, so thank you for this nice black tablecloth. Love it. And also welcome to our new Board of Ed trustee, Terrence, aka T-Rock. I hope you know what you're getting yourself into. Continue what Trustee Irvin just mentioned. Before I get into that, I wanted to mention first that the regents were very busy. Yesterday, on Monday, the Board of Regents did vote on a moratorium on removing state test scores as a component of teacher evaluations. It was a reversal of the state's policy earlier this year when they voted to increase the weight of test scores and evaluations. So if you haven't heard that off-the-press update, that's good news for the reform movement. And they also heard from Dennis Walcott. He is the former New York City's chancellor. I'm sure you're familiar with him. And now he was currently appointed in August to lead monitors overseeing the East Ramapo School District. So one of his recommendations, and there was a petition I circulated to my fellow board members, was to appoint a state monitor with the power to veto decisions by the local elected school board. And so he presented that to the Board of Regents, and that'll be taken up by the regents to either approve or not, or to recommend, I should say, to the legislature. Along with what Kirsten was stating, school board members, did you know, school board members are mandatory reporters of suspected child abuse and neglect. Now, when this came up before, it was presented that we had to do mandatory training on the Defense of Student Act, aka DASA, but that's not mandatory. This particular statute is mandatory, and each of you has the PowerPoint as well as the document. So Julie did a very good job of going over it. It's I'm not going to go into it at length, but as part of the New York State Safe School, Safe Schools Against Violence in Education SAVE Act, the education law was updated, and so it's the law, it's intended, and Ralph, you can get into this way more than I can, to cover specific allegations of an incident involving child abuse in an educational setting as opposed to a domestic setting. So we are mandated, as well as there's a whole list of mandatory reporters somewhere. Yeah, nurses, guidance counselors, psychologists, social workers, board members. So because we're in that group, we now are going to be responsible for this training. So, and it will be provided, as Trustee Irvin mentioned. In addition to that, I have spoken with President Hughes and Dr. Montesano about non-mandatory training because we have several new board members. Jen, I think since you've been on the board, you haven't gone through this training, and now that we have, are we going to call you T-Rock or Terrence? What do you prefer?
T-Rock is
T-Rock.
Okay.
Now that we have T-Rock. We, when I first came onto the board, we did a diversity training, and it was very, very helpful. There has been some renewed interest around our logo, and in light of that, I think it would be beneficial to new board members as well as a refresher for existing board members to understand our community better on issues that we face because we have such a diverse population. So we're going to look to probably schedule that at some point and maybe blend it in with another training that's not mandatory, but I found also very beneficial. When I first came to the board, we did a training around sexual harassment, and we learned a lot. There's some assumption about what that is and what that isn't, so it'll give the board a better understanding as well as how to handle those unfortunate situations. And lastly, this book, our homework that we've been given by our superintendent, most likely to succeed, apparently not just board members reading it, but our chair persons are reading it, our building leaders, there's a leadership team that's reading it, and I see the heads nodding. Isn't this a fascinating book? I mean, really, really and truly. And so I've just perused it. There was a case study on page 49. I just thank you for getting this for us. And talk about education reform. I mean, your superintendent is the education reform person for your district, and I can only applaud you for your vision and how you're leading this district. So thank you for the book. And along with everyone else, I just want to wish everybody a very happy and healthy holiday season. And that's my report.
Thank you very much, Trustee Marshall. Trustee Maraschino.
All right. So I guess first I'll start with James. I think that would be a great idea to do the diversity training. Yeah. That sounds wonderful to me. I feel like, especially in these times of sort of concerns about terrorism and so much talk about immigration and the Muslim religion, I feel like I've heard so many scary comments in the community, in my opinion, just of people who I feel like have really misguided opinions of people of different religions, races, backgrounds. So I think it would be a really specifically good time to do that. want to thank Upper Nyack PTA and Upper Nyack. This is the first year in I think 11 years that I haven't had a child in Upper Nyack, but we'll be back next year. So I'm excited. Next year. It feels kind of weird actually now that I'm sitting here not being in the building for so many months. But yeah, everything is beautiful, and thank you to the wonderful PTA for everything. Just like touching on a bunch of other things that were said, I wanted to thank the district for putting up some really good information on the website about the turf. It's been up there for a while now, but it's just some new information about all the details of the turf that was approved by the board, and it's got some great details that anyone who's got any questions about it can find a link on the website. I wanted to mention that I was at the sixth grade concert on Friday at the middle school, and it was wonderful. Band, orchestra, chorus were all just amazing, so that was great. And James and Leanne really covered a lot of it, but just the legislative issues that have been going on this week. I feel like it was such a big week in education policy at the federal level and the state level. It just seems like so many things that various education advocates have been talking about for the past few years are really seem to be being heard by legislators at different levels. I mean, I guess now it's sort of the time to see what's actually implemented and what happens next. But, you know, the federal level is really, it sounds like, given a lot of control back to the states and local control, which a lot of people have been talking about. I mean, the suspension of the tying the test scores to teacher evaluations is huge. So, I mean, it's big, you know. I hope people are sort of reading a lot of the articles and things that are out there because this is, it feels like what a lot of people have really been asking for. So, I think it was a really interesting week for education. And I did want to thank James, too, for sharing the petition about East Ramapo, because it really does sound like, you know, there's really still a need for a lot of oversight in that district, from my opinion. And, you know, what, you know, when I attended a Rockland County School Board Association meeting a few weeks ago, and just sort of from a very knowledgeable group of school board members, you know, just talking about the issues still existing in that school district. So that's my report. Happy holidays to everyone, and I hope everyone enjoys their break.
Thanks very much, Jen. Trustee Mark.
Thank you, President Hughes. Thank you, Upper Nyack. We always feel welcome. Mm. Thank you for the delicious dinner of fruit and water and peppermint bark. Fantastic. T-Rock, welcome.
Thank you again, Mark.
I guess the T stands for trustee now. It also stands for Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Your Tuesdays will never be the same. We welcome you to the board. Your input's valuable. I also was at the Shared Information Center session about the reporting of child abuse. This is good information. I'm eager to have everybody have the information. I also was able to spend a little time at the middle school concert just now, and I have to tell you, as a professional musician, we have every right to already be proud of our music department, but this is some new energy at the middle school level that is really unparalleled. You can go all over the place and go to conferences, and you'll hear this. You'll hear at the highest level, this is what you're going to get. So we have every reason to continue being proud of this music department, and I'm glad to be a part of that. And lastly, speaking of the music, was able to attend the Red Storm Marching Band Awards dinner, and they have a lot of energy, and they have a sense of pride, and they have a sense of humor, and they're ready for next season. The band had started out with about 15, 25 kids. Now there are 65 of them, and it's growing, and it has a lot of support from the community. So it was just another good thing to be a part of. And I wish everybody a healthy, happy holiday and a good new year. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Rock. Trustee Rock.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to say thank you to everyone for the well wishes. Thank you to Upper Nyack, again, everyone's comment, what a spread, but wow, nice first meeting, so first impressions are everything. I also want to thank Dr. Montesano and the staff for getting me up to speed, Ralph, our attorney, just great onboarding in terms of getting me up to speed and getting me educated. So hopefully I can provide some input and value to everybody. Lastly, I can't help but notice our contingent of veterans that are here. I just want to thank you for your service. Appreciate you coming out, and looking forward to, if there's a section, if you guys get up to speak, looking forward to what you have to say. And happy holidays to everyone. And that's it.
Okay. All right. One thing I forgot to mention, and thank you so much for mentioning the veterans. I would like to propose that at a future workshop, obviously they'll have an opportunity to speak tonight, but that we consider putting a public motion, a public hearing on the agenda around the VTE, the veteran tax exempt issue, if that's okay with everyone.
You can explain the process a little bit. Mm-hmm. We have to have a public hearing.
I'll ask Ralph to do that to explain the process. Right. Yeah, that might be a good idea, Ralph.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So we'd like to put it on. So if you could explain for us and the benefit of the audience how what the process would be for us.
Yes. Yeah, so the veterans tax exemption is something that the school district and school board is allowed to consider under the law. In order to do so, you have to hold a public hearing. That public hearing can be done at a board meeting, as a portion of the board meeting, and you would be required to give some public notice in advance of that board meeting at which you're going to hold the public hearing. And following the public hearing, at which the board can speak and community members can speak on the topic of the veterans tax exemption, then the board would take action or decide whether or not to take action to adopt the veterans tax exemption.
Okay, okay, fine. And those were two hearings you said we needed to have? Two hearings?
Depending upon what direction the Board of Education wants to go, there are possibly three types of public hearings to be held. One would be with respect to the whether or not to grant the veterans tax exemption itself in the standard format. If the board was interested in doing that, then you would go forward with the first public hearing. Following that, if there is interest on the Board of Education's part in terms of upward or downward adjusting the tax exemptions, then that would be a second public hearing and possibly a third public hearing if the board was interested in extending the benefits of the veterans tax exemption to Gold Star families.
Okay, thank you, Rob. Is there interest on the, Trustee Martin?
Just for informational purposes, there are time sensitive issues here in order to have this in place by certain dates and so forth, are there not?
Correct. Your taxable status date is March 1st in Rockland County. So you need to have, if the board is interested in adopting and making a change, that would have to be done in advance of that March 1st date. And you would really, in my opinion, need to look at this matter during your January board meeting. The latest may be your first board meeting, the work session meetings that you do the first Tuesday of the month in February, because if something is adopted, you want to give enough time to notify your taxing jurisdictions, the local towns, that you've made that adoption. And secondly, you want to make sure that there is time for word to get out to affected families so that they could file whatever application materials they need with the local taxing authorities in advance.
Okay, thank you. So,
so we have a board meeting on January 5th, mm-hmm. and then the other second one on the 19th.
Okay.
What do we have? If what would we have? You know, what would be the timeline for that within that? I think your January 19th, which is your regular monthly meeting, the third Tuesday of the month, that meeting should be fine in terms of holding the public hearings. And the question will be whether or not to address one of those items or all three of those items at that particular meeting. And then a vote could be taken at that meeting. The first meeting in February would be the latest I would want to see you folks go.
But we don't have one early. Sorry, Dr. Montesano.
Yeah, just clarifications. You just have one February meeting scheduled. Oh.
You should be prepared if there's interest in terms of moving forward. You should be prepared to take action then at the that January 19th meeting.
But we do have a meeting on the 5th.
Could probably tee up.
It would be prudent to have it on the 5th in case we had questions. You know,
the workshop.
At
on
least
the
have the first. Well, it's a public hearing.
Okay,
so we could have a public hearing on the 5th if the agenda will accommodate it. Yes.
Yeah. The only thing we probably have to—I know the board would be interested in—we've done through Carlene's office have worked with both Clarkstown and Orangetown to get projections for the impact on the average home, et cetera, in terms of because as everybody is aware, the veterans tax program does have an impact on the non-veterans in terms of how it's financed. And what we will need to do is get an updated, tax rolls in terms of what, so the board knows exactly, and the public that may want to comment on this would know what impact it has on both sides of the equation.
Okay. So the implication of that is you don't think you'd have that by the 5th of
January? I would actually defer to Carlene. I don't know. It seemed like last time it took quite a while for them to get that information, but...
Well, why don't we do this? We've got some time before, not that much time. Really. Next week is a holiday.
No. Yeah. We don't.
Well, listen, we'll sit to talk through the agenda. We'll be prepping the agenda. So if we've got the materials, we'll put it on for the...
Yeah, I mean, you still have a good benchmark. I mean, I don't think that the numbers are going to change that drastically from the last time we had collected this, which I think might be a year or two
old.
I mean, I agree.
So, I mean, I don't think it's critical. You don't really need to know, you know, precisely, but it would be good to have more, you know, updated information.
Okay. Trustee Irvin?
Yeah, I have a question about the information in terms of the implication for each individual homeowner. I'm not sure if we ran that information once before, but I wasn't sure if that was public disclosed information. Is that going to be something that is available for the public?
Well, I think we want to certainly make sure the public is aware of what the impact would be, you know, just in terms of, and what I would suggest we do, honestly, that night as a part of your hearing is either myself or Carlene do a presentation briefly, just to give everyone understanding what the VTE is, and also the impact, because there is a differential if you live in Orangetown versus Clarkstown on, you know, what the impact would be. And we can make that part of it and then lead right to a hearing as a part of that as well. That would work out fine.
Okay.
Great.
Fira?
He answered my question and part of the process. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Trustee Marshall. In addition to, Ralph, you discussed there are minimums and ranges and maximums. So in that same evening, I think it would be helpful to the board to have those ranges.
If we can make that even part of it.
In addition to the tax impact on
make that part of the presentation.
Exactly.
But to Ralph's point, you know, when you move into the hearing stage, there's different phases of you know, how you know, to clarify. You know, you could set them all up on that same night as he indicated, but we just have to make sure we have a demarcation when we go into one element of the exemption versus some of these others.
Okay,
thank you.
Well,
And I would just point out, if there's no interest on the part of the Board of Education in terms of option 2 or 3, you don't need to hold the public hearing on those issues. If you only wanted to do, for example, option 1, if there was interest on that. So that's up to the Board of Education.
Okay, thank you. Trustee Mark?
Well, I was just going to say that all of that being the case, there is a little bit of information to absorb.
Right.
If we need to make decisions on this prudently on the 19th, we might, if we can have some kind of a hearing on the 5th, even with the information that we've got, if it reflects a good barometer of what we need to know, then we have time to sift through it and answer any questions from the community, so that by the time we have the 19th comes around.
No, I think it also gives members of the community, and I would suggest we do what Ralph's had, I think he might have mentioned that, or I read it, to maybe advertise it in the, you know, local newspaper, post, you know, just so we can get the word out that the board is going to be speaking about this, and we could maybe post both of those dates, and that way if somebody cannot for some reason make the 5th, they may also be able to make your 19th.
And we'll have to be figuring out how to be a little noisy about the 5th, because it's so close to New Year's and Christmas and all those things that people are on vacation or away or paying attention to family.
I'll bring back some noisemakers from my news.
Well, I have the feeling, I mean, there are potential noisemakers right here tonight, and I assume someone will spread the word.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Thanks for that, Ralph.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Montesano, any response to citizens' prior proposals, questions, and concerns?
There are none.
Okay. Having said that, I actually have a comment from a citizen. I meant to mention it in my report, asking about the survey and wondering if, and you sort of mentioned it, to see if it could be extended, because I think there are members of the community who would like a little bit more time.
Yes, so. And actually I did get an email about that as well, and it's certainly a possibility. Okay. What we are planning to do, we have a number of outreach efforts. Because as the board is aware, we do have a number of families that do not have internet access, may not get the emails we're sending out, or in fact even the robocalls. So there's been a number of activities we've done to invite members of the public in to fill out hard copies. They're also, I think, located in the library. So what we're going to be doing as we move into the early, obviously very early next week, see what kind of numbers we have. And if we're not, you know, what we're hoping for is to see, you know, really we want to hit about a 50% rate. And we can easily extend that into, you know, mid-January or something like that. There's no real timeline for this. It's really under our control.
So the percentage is 50% of what?
We sent out, because as you know, we sent it out to families, to key communicators. We sent copies out. also invited, sent out invitations to members of the staff. So I think there's all told about 2,600 plus invites, if you will, out. So that's the baseline. When I said we're about 30%,
oh, okay.
That's, you know, in terms of what kind of turnaround date rate we've had.
It's pretty good.
As surveys go, I mean, it's so far it's good, but at the same time, the more the merrier. You know, we're really looking for as much input as we can.
Okay. Excellent. Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to add my voice to the idea that I think it's great that you can be flexible about the end date, because getting more input is valuable.
It doesn't hurt, yeah. That's absolutely. Agreed.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks, Dr. Montesano.
Okay. Sorry, President Hughes.
Oh, yes. Dan Jupcher.
Forgive me. I just wanted to be clear. Did we have to have a majority to put the veterans tax exemption as a workshop item?
Oh, that's right.
Do we have to make a motion?
Or do we have to be more official about it?
Your protocols typically for any agenda items going on your agenda is that you have four of you that agree that you want to see it on the agenda. So to your point, you don't need a formal motion, but if four of your heads nod, that would be enough of an affirmation for the president to place it on the agenda. And by the way, the president, so you're aware of policy, just as a matter of procedure, the president is the one member of your board that if she wants something on the agenda, she can put it on the agenda without any other support.
It's
so you
on
can
the
do
agenda.
One of unilaterally, or you can do it by consensus.
Thank you. But do I have four nods?
Is my official nod.
I'm not going to sleep. It's a nod. Thank you. We'll make
for
sure.
For the purpose of the podcast, I think you are getting nods.
You're getting
nods. Nods are very silent.
Good point. Good point, Andrew. Okay. Citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns. Nick Del Pizzo. You could state your name for the podcast.
Let's get the microphone.
Thank you. My name is Nick Del Pizzo. I live at 35 4th Avenue, Nyack, New York. I'm a graduate of Nyack High School, 1961. A member of Post 310 in Nyack, American Legion. Also a member of Post 9215 of the Vietnam Veteran, VFW, and a member of Chapter 333, Vietnam Veterans of Rockland County. I served in the United States Air Force from 1967 to 71. As an aircraft maintenance officer. Fortunately, I'm not a member of Disabled Veterans or a member of the Legion Purple Heart, thankfully. I spoke to you in October, you may recall, and asked you to consider granting veterans in the United School District an exemption, a partial exemption on their school taxes. As you know, the state of New York has authorized boards, school boards throughout the state to grant this exemption. And I'm happy to say three school boards in Rockland County have taken advantage of that and done so. North Rockland, Clarkstown, and South Orangetown. You see, it's a very important issue to a lot of veterans in the veteran community, and some of them are here tonight. Quite a few of them are Nyack High School graduates and Nyack residents. And they ask me, well, how come Nyack doesn't do it? North Rockland's done it, Clarkstown's done it, South Orangetown's done it. And to tell you the truth, I really don't know the answer. I'm encouraged by what I heard tonight. I think I heard we're going to have this issue on the agenda in your January meeting. I see some heads nodding affirmatively, so I'm very encouraged and thankful to hear that. I'd like to reiterate, though, a couple of things that were mentioned previously in October. Jerry Dinellen spoke. He's here tonight. He's an old Nyack guy. He's the director of the Veterans Service Agency in Rockland. He pointed out to you that the veteran population is a declining population. Whatever exemption you grant will slowly dissipate as the number of veterans literally die off. The World War II veterans die off. The greatest percentage of veterans left in Rockland County are Vietnam era veterans, my generation. Many of them move out. They leave. They leave New York. They go to low-tax states, North Carolina and Florida. Another reason why should you grant this exemption, and I surely hope you will, the effects of it will diminish over time. And there's one really very important reason to grant this exemption, and that is you want to tell the students of NIAC School District what things are important to the school board. You want to tell the students that you honor, applaud, and relish and cherish the service of the men and women in our district who've served our country to keep our country free, to keep our community safe and free. And you don't want to send the alternative message that you disrespect their service and you won't grant this exemption to them. So I thank you for considering it. I hope you'll find it in your mind and heart and budget to grant the exemption. I'll just add one little comment. I'm very interested in a project that's going on. It's called as a NIAC High School graduate. It's called the Tower Fund. You know, there's a group of people in the community that want to build a replica of the facade of the old school and the tower and keep the tower there on the stadium at a new facility. And I'm a member of the NIAC Rotary Club, and Dr. Montesano is also a member. And we had a speaker come from that group to Rotary Club and give a presentation. They're trying to raise $1.2 million for this project. And one of the things the man said was that the school district has pledged $400,000 toward this project. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you can find that kind of money for that kind of project, I'm sure you can find the money to support the people that spent their time and put their lives on the line in order to keep the America that we know and love, the one that gives us elections to have school board members elected. Thank you for your service, and I wish you all a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays. Thanks to NIAC, Upper NIAC Elementary and PTA for hosting this meeting. And I'll say good night.
Thank you, Mr. Del Pizzo.
You're welcome.
Nick, just one point of clarification. I just want to make sure I state, and certainly for the record as well, and as always, first of all, you speak so eloquently before the microphone, just the same way you do in our Rotary meetings, and I do thank you for your comments. Your last comment with regard to asking the board to, if I understood correctly, pledging money towards the veteran tax exemption. And first off, the board has no affiliation with the Tower Fund project per se in terms of this $400,000. What the board has done as a part of its bond program with the facilities is to have a place for a press box that a typical probably not unlike what you see down at the older high school, not the elaborate project that you saw that the folks in the Tower Fund are trying to raise. So the $400,000 is really not commingled. The board has not pledged any money towards the Tower Fund. That's point number one. Point number two, boards of education do not have an ability to budget their operating funds, bond funds, any dollars towards the veteran tax exemption. The only question before a board of education is to authorize the veteran tax exemption, which has an impact in terms of its financing from those members of the community that are non-veterans that are not eligible for that. So that's where those dollars come from. It has nothing to do with a pledge, whether this board feels that they wanted to put money towards that from its budget. It's illegal for them to do that. There's no avenue for that to occur. So while I know the board will take to heart your comments as they had the last time around, and we certainly thank you for that, I just want to make sure we have a point of clarification with regard to how the structure is set up for the veterans tax exemption. So thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Montesano.
Yep, you need the mic.
Well, thank you for that clarification. But my understanding is the board has to approve a budget. And the budget,
the budget, of course. I don't want to get too much into dialogue. I'd be happy to take a sidebar at the next Tuesday meeting.
Yeah.
We can talk about this. But so we're clear. The way this program works, as you know, all boards of education, a good portion of their revenue source comes from the tax levy. The way this program works is the same dollar amount of tax levy exists whether this Board of Education votes towards the veterans tax exemption or they determine they don't want to engage in a veterans tax exemption. There's no benefit, there's no loss, there's no advantage for any district to enter into the veterans tax. They're still going to get the same amount of dollars of revenue. The proportion of that revenue from the tax levy that this district secures is dependent upon the veterans tax exemption. In other words, let's say the amount of money we raise is $1 million in the tax levy. If the board decides they want to go into that that veterans tax exemption, it means those members of the veterans that are eligible will pay less dollars. That money will be made up by those that are non-veterans that are not eligible. So the same amount of the dollar amount occurs with the development of this Board of Education's budget, irregardless of the veterans tax exemption, if that's clear.
Understood. I think I spoke to that in October about shifting burdens and about where the burden lies. And I made the point that the even though a burden would shift to non-veteran owners, the men and women that serve bear, and those that continue to serve bear, a very significant burden that can't be measured in dollars. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification, Dr. Rossitano. John Vassa. No, for the podcast, John.
John,
you need to state your name for the podcast.
I'm sorry, because you have to talk a little louder.
You need to state your name for the podcast in the mic. Ladies and gentlemen, John Vassa on the mic.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Vassa.
Well, I know you got the new number. The benefit of y'all that who don't know me, my name is John Vassa. V-A-S-S-E-R. Not A-R now. I don't want you confused with the E and A. A is for rich people, and the E for the poor people. And so happens, I'm in that class. But that's not what I'm up here for, y'all. You know? I just want to say this here, Mr. Monerat. I guess you and I, we've been over this several times before. But I have been in contact with the Attorney General. And what the Attorney General is saying, if we need it, if we have a problem, is to contact him. So what I think you're doing, you're confusing New York with New Jersey. And New Jersey, they have these type of laws that's a little bit different from the state of New York. And so therefore, you always get confused when you have to deal with those type of laws. You know? But anyway, I just want to say, I had my son graduated from here, and also my daughter, and I had two grandkids. I had Winston, he graduated, I'm a faculty, my daughter, granddaughter just graduated this year, and she's going to college, and Quincy's going to college, he'll be graduating first, so they be playing football, he's pretty good. But anyway, again, like I said, we are here for an exemption, and we want to come up with some type of vote, but we know precisely where you stand on this. Not saying we're going to do it this way or do it next year. It can go on and on and on, see. So my case is, I want to make sure that you'll have a predicted date that you want to do this there, but we want to know where you stand on these issues. Don't say we're going to do this and do that. I had count with just about every one of the board, and all of y'all are in favor, aren't it? It just happened to have had a chance to present it to you to let them know exactly to carry it out. So I just want to say thank you, Mr. I appreciate your honesty. I know every time you see me, you speak to me. I hope you continue. Like I say, I'm on your side. I'm on the school side. But believe me, I'm also a veteran, and we know what we need. Because I want to be poor all my life here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vassa. Okay. Are there any... sorry. Citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on the workshop items. You could come up, take the mic, and state your name, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. My name is Liz Gessel. I am the commander of Upper Nyack VFW Post 9215, right over here on that road over there. So you've obviously heard from some of my comrades, and I just wanted to make a comment that these guys are our veterans. These guys have gone before us. There's more coming behind us. And when we come home from Iraq, I'm an Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran, by the way. When we come home from Iraq, you know, you get out of the service. You don't really have a job. You're used to getting paid virtually nothing. And unfortunately, you often settle to get paid virtually nothing again when you try to acclimate into civilian life. A lot of us have families. A lot of us have young kids. So now we have a burden of wanting to live in Rockland County because we grew up in Rockland County. We want our families. We want local businesses and everybody to strive within the county. But given the high tax rates, we can't. So this little tiny bit that can help us stay in our hometowns, in our home county, it goes a long way. It really does. I'm a single mother, daughter's in eighth grade, and it would really, really help. I don't know why we're not mimicking Clarkstown and Orangetown. I mean, I think that they made it happen. I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. So, I mean, we have copies of their presentations and how they went about executing it, and I think, why can't we just mimic that? So, that being said, I think the first step is to get the board to, correct me if I'm wrong, get the board to agree to put it on the agenda, and then can the board at this point vote to send it to public hearing?
We just did.
So that's
we are
so
agreeing
putting
that
it on the will, agenda is voting to put it on.
Yeah,
okay.
What we agreed is that we would have the public hearing. We have to have the public hearing.
Absolutely.
Right? So we've had various, informal public discussions, right? Because members have come forward and spoken to us.
Yeah.
And we've decided that we now need to schedule that public hearing. So that's what we've done for January. And as you heard, we'll plan it for both sessions in both board meetings in January, so
wonderful.
We can accommodate as many opinions and thoughts. We need to give it some thought. There's a lot of information for us to absorb as well.
So they're both public sessions, so people.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
I just want to make sure that when I reach out to my fellow veterans, that I'm not telling them to show up at a meeting that they're not going to be allowed to be at.
No, absolutely. Okay. And the workshop items, and as you see, just as you have stepped up here, you have the opportunity to step up and discuss any of the workshop items that are there. So you will have that opportunity on both of those days.
Okay, great. Does anybody have any questions for me while I'm up here?
I just wanted, for a point of clarification, the first meeting has been agreed to put it on as a workshop item. We will be discussing and inviting the public to comment.
It will be a hearing, yes.
Okay.
Embedded
public
in we're allowed to have it as part of the workshop.
Right. Technically, it will be a public hearing listed under your workshop items.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay.
And then the second meeting, depending on what happens at the first,
would be the same thing.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And then we would take the vote at that point.
Okay.
We
you.
Can.
You answered my question.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Montesano, workshop items.
Yes, I'm going to at this time invite Audrey Cabell to come up. She's going to be giving a very brief presentation to give an update on bilingual programming. To our veterans, you're welcome to stay for the remainder of the meeting, but this would be, as she's getting set up, might be a nice time if you're thinking about leaving. This would be a good time to exit, so thank you. And thanks for being here tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Board members, you may either maybe take a seat in the audience just so you're not, or just turn your chairs around. Whatever you're most comfortable.
Okay, Audrey, we're gonna move.
Joe, is that lighting at all? If you don't know where it's your first year, you might not know where the switches are, so don't go crazy.
Wild Joe is Finding the Light Switch. My name is Audrey Cabell, and my journey with NIAX started on July 1st of this year. And thank you. I'm not nervous. I'm actually very proud to stand up here and talk about this special group of kids. We'll start it off with, like I stated, my journey started in July, and now the new journey, I like to call it, of the English language learner begins, or it started in September of 2015. So what I'm going to do is just provide you with some information on what has happened these past couple of months. Here are the present statistics of the English language learners. And for those of you who do not know what an English language learner is, or the student, it is a child that starts school who is not proficient in English. Okay, so they might have some skills in speaking English, but they are not proficient in English. So they are classified as an English language learner, or an L for short. So currently we have 244 students that are considered English language learners, but I'm going to change that number and add two more because today Liberty welcomed two more English language learners. So now it brings our number up to 246 students. One of them being entering level, and the other one we're not sure yet on what level. But we do have different language proficiency levels. We have five of them. Entering, which are students that do not have any command of the English language. They do not speak English, so we must teach them how to speak English, just like all the other students. But with the entering level, it takes a little bit more time. We have 57 students, and this is district-wide. For emerging students, we have 41. Transitioning, we have 39 students. Expanding, 77. And commanding, those students who tested proficient in English, we have 30 students district-wide. English language learners make up 8.36% of the student population, and there are several languages that are spoken. Dominant language is Spanish, but we have Spanish, Creole, Urdu, Tagalog, Yoruba, Arabic, Vietnamese, Chinese, Indonesian, Malayalam, and Hindi. We're going to look at previous years. We'll look at last year. Last year we had district-wide 185 students, so you can see that there has been a substantial increase this school year. And I'm going to just let you know that it didn't happen in September. The most popular month is actually November. We had a large increase in high school. We had about 12 students in high school. And in 2012-2013, we had 159, so you can see that it's trending higher every single year. So we had this collaborative inquiry, which I know the board is very familiar with and the district administrators are familiar with. But in October 2014, the NIAC public school administrators hired a team of individuals to come in and assess the English language learners and the English as a new language, thank you, English as a new language program. And they did offer many suggestions, and I used this document as a tool. Wow, that's great. I used this document as a tool. And what I did was, when I came in July, I looked at this document and I used it as a checklist. What can I fix right away? What can I change right away? So I changed some things. I fixed some things that were very easy to do. One of the things is implement two bilingual classes. So that number, the kindergarten number has changed. We now will have 23 students in that kindergarten class, and we have 17 students in the first grade class. These two classes are very unique because it is a transitional bilingual class. It is federal mandate, actually, sorry, state mandate, that if we have 20 students that speak the same language district-wide, we are to offer bilingual education. First grade has 17 students, but we actually had 22 students that were eligible for that program. What happens is parents have an option of opting out at any time. So if a parent changes their mind tomorrow and requests that the child be removed from the bilingual class, for whatever reason, we are allowed to say yes. A lot of parents have opted in to the bilingual program. With the first grade class, we had 3 students that did not show and 2 students that did opt out of the program, and it's because their home school was Valley Cottage and they have other children in the Valley Cottage school, so they didn't want to move their other child.
Audrey,
yes?
You mentioned that...
You need the mic, James.
You mentioned that the different languages that you showed on the one slide, but the bilingual education that's currently being offered, is that only in the one language?
Spanish, right.
It's in Spanish, and it's what part of their day is taught in Spanish and part of their day is taught in English. And the reason only Spanish is being offered is because we do not have 20 students district-wide that speak other languages.
Thank you.
Okay, this is one of my favorite quotes. If you want to change, you will have to be willing to be uncomfortable. And I think this is where we are right now. Some teachers are very uncomfortable. And they're not uncomfortable because English language learners are new to the district. They're not new to the district. It's that we have a lot of students that are beginner level, and now they are in the classroom more. Because of the new regulations, we had to make some changes. It's no longer more of a self-contained model. It's students are integrated into the classrooms and teachers are at a loss. They want their students to succeed, but they just don't know how. What I've done is implemented professional development. That's one of the main things that needs to happen. We need to train teachers on how to work with English as a second language or English as a new language, as it's referred to now, students. And I have been going school to school, teacher to teacher, and working with teachers on how to use best practices with English language learners. And a lot of these teachers, it's just reminding them some of the things that you already do in the classroom is helping the student. But we might want to add some more visuals. We might want to add some more auditory. So they just need reminders. And a lot of the teachers, at least at Liberty, because I've been there most, are becoming a little more comfortable with the students and working with the students in the classroom. One of the resources I did offer teachers is I created a Symbaloo, and we're short on time, so I'm not going to show you the Symbaloo, but I will most certainly email it to you. It's a resource that I made available and I created. It's a bookmarking site which provides the teachers with information on how to work with English language learners in their classroom. And what I did was I made it specific to different subject areas such as music, art, because in the bilingual classes especially, we have Spanish-speaking students. We have 23 Spanish-speaking students. They go into art, and the teacher doesn't speak the language. So I created this tool to help the teachers because I can't be every place in the district, but I can offer some tools and develop some tools to help them. Here are some of the goals for this year. To comply definitely with CR Part 154, and part of the complying is integrated classes, making sure that the English language learners are in every classroom. We also have to make sure that we offer bilingual education. We also have to offer professional development. That is required. 15% of professional development for all general ed teachers has to be language acquisition or English as a new language. Okay. Increase programs for English language learners before school tutorial at Liberty. We also have after-school homework help at the middle school and high school levels, a Saturday program coming in the spring, a newcomer SIFE program. SIFE is Students with Interrupted Formal Education. That's one of the challenges we have at the high school. We have a, a number of students that are coming into the high school level, 17 years old, and the last time they were in school was in third grade. So we have to educate these children the best way we know how. And again, it comes down to professional development, training teachers, hiring new staff members that know how to work with students with interrupted formal education. Also, the Rosetta Stone program has been a wonderful tool to use with some of these students to develop social language. Okay, another is increased student performance district-wide and student retention, especially at the high school level. What happens is many of the students decide to drop out. They don't technically drop out, they just don't show up anymore. So we want to have programs in place to have them come back to school. Working closely with the families, that's a big priority, and it was a big priority over the summer. I met every single family that was registered with the bilingual program. I explained to them the bilingual program. I also discussed Common Core with these families in their native language. So it made them comfortable, made them understand. Also, family outreach and support for these families, because a lot of them come from very poor homes. So we want to make sure as a school community we are helping them. We're helping their child socially and emotionally. Offering documents in their native language has been key. It's been key. A great communication happens when someone understands. And if we're sending documents to these families in English, they do not understand. There are many families that come to the district office seeking Yesenia Polanco or myself to just translate simple documents for them. So we make sure that important documents go to the homes in their native language. And I have had many teachers reach out to me via email and phone just to translate some documents, and I've also offered them tools such as Google Translate. It's not perfect, but it's a form of communication. This is an idea that I would like to promote to the teachers district-wide. Tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, involve me and I learn. We have to make sure that we're involving these students every single day. And involving them sometimes means stepping out of your comfort zone and doing things that are different. And I want teachers to be able to step out of their comfort zone and say, you know what, maybe this will work with this child, and this child will understand the concept. May not understand the language, but start to understand the concept. And that is my presentation to you. And the goal is success for all NIAC students, not just English language learners, but for all students in NIAC. Thank you. I was just waiting for the lights to come on, and you're in front of your microphones if you have any questions in regards to the programs or the students.
Anyone have any questions? Trustee Maraschino.
Sure, thank you. That was a great presentation.
Thank you.
Very exciting to have you. I was curious, do the bilingual classes have, I assume they have teaching assistants in those classrooms? And I was wondering if they are Spanish speaking teaching assistant.
For the first grade class, they do not have a Spanish-speaking TA.
They don't.
But they also have a teaching assistant. It's only half of the day for first grade.
Mm-hmm.
The kindergarten has a full-time TA in the classroom that speaks Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do we have, like, I'm just curious, what can we start doing as a district to, like, do we have an emphasis on hiring TAs that have Spanish language skills, or?
We do have two positions that are out there now, but they're for ENL teachers. And mm-hmm. the teachers we're asking, they are bilingual. It's not necessarily a TA in the classroom that's needed. It's if you have a teacher in the classroom that uses best practices, who knows how to work with the students in the class, A lot of these kids, they're bilingual. They're truly bilingual kids. So they speak the majority of the time in English, and they also are learning Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
They're not proficient in Spanish. We have this idea that some of the students are proficient in Spanish, but they're not proficient in their own home language because a lot of their parents only have a third grade, fourth grade level.
Mm-hmm.
So socially, they can converse, but building that academic language in Spanish is what is key.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Saturday programs that you mentioned?
The Saturday programs are something that I've been working very closely with Dr. Gregory, and I came to her with this idea of implementing a Saturday program, but also involving parents in it. So the idea and the concept is to provide them with extra support, because it takes 5 to 7 years for a child to acquire language, especially mm-hmm. academic language. So they don't have a lot of time. The state doesn't allow us that time. They are required to take the NICETEL. They're required to take a NICESLAT exam at the end of the year, but also other state assessments. So we want to provide them with the tools and that extra support. The other component is inviting parents to workshops, and that would be working closely with the NIAC Center and mm-hmm. having parent workshops at the same time that their child is receiving extra support. We'll have some parent support as well.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any changes? I didn't read this in all the new sort of education stuff that came out this past week, but regarding English language learners taking the state assessments.
It's on the floor now.
Because that was certainly something that...
Yeah, because they're only exempt for 1 year. So
yeah.
They're only exempt for 1 year from taking the state assessment. So what the state has proposed, or actually Office of Bilingual Education mm-hmm. has proposed, is extending that 1 year. Mm-hmm. So the first mm-hmm. year that they're here, a newcomer comes in to the district, they are required, if they're in a testing grade, to take their test or the math test in their native language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The state is assuming that these children are proficient in their native language, and they are not.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to take the test. They're required to take math in their native language. Following year, they're required to take ELA, and that's not offered. That has to be in an English version.
So it's being debated.
Yes, it is.
Now, I haven't read that much about it.
Yes.
Huh, okay.
It is.
Okay.
Some of the big things that are happening statewide is now developing a SIFE assessment to mm-hmm. truly identify the needs of the SIFE child, which is that student with interrupted formal education,
mm-hmm.
to really determine what grade level they are proficient in their own native language
mm-hmm.
so that we can better teach these students.
Okay.
So that's something that's coming down and also changing that time period, that time frame.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Trustee Marshall.
Thank you. First of all, that was an excellent education for me, for all of us, I believe, because we have to see the whole composite and what challenges you're facing. And it seems very, very daunting in that you happen to do a full court press to catch up with the trend.
Yes.
Because given the increase between last year and this year, mm-hmm. It seems like at the elementary level it's covered because we have that mandate and you have the E&L classroom.
Absolutely.
But in the middle school and high school, what challenges are you seeing in those
we
buildings?
We see the most challenges in the middle school and in the high school,
yeah.
and that's why we have those two positions out there.
Do you feel that you're staffing for that growth, or next year you feel that you have two more positions that
well,
you have
if it keeps
for?
Trending the
yeah.
way it is trending,
yeah.
we're going to need more. The model that we're supposed to be using with these students and what we're going towards and what professional development I'm introducing to a lot of the staff members, especially at the middle school level, is a co-teach model where you have a content area teacher and an ENL teacher teaching together. And a lot of the content area teachers, some of them traveled with me to Long Island on Friday to watch a seminar on co-teaching. And it was fantastic. And they came back and they were excited. We have in the math, 7th and 8th grade math right now, they are doing co-teaching. We have one of the young ladies, Betsy, that came back from maternity leave, and she was excited and gung-ho. And we have our ENL teacher, and they are now co-teaching.
That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Yeah, thank you. I was at a school board conference a couple of years ago. I think it was the one in San Diego. And they had, it was the Woodbury School District right up here in Woodbury Commons that had a program that they had actually won an award for, where they had, for these English language learners, they had classes for the parents to come and learn the language. And they were coming in conjunction, something similar, I think, to what you're trying to accomplish with the Saturday program. And they actually had grant money for that. When the grant ran out, unfortunately, I think the program got cut. But they were getting great responses from some of the families wanting to come in and learn the language as well, and there's an opportunity to do that. So I'm very encouraged to see that we have that. And I just I want to encourage the district to try to do that as much as possible because, you know, parents care about their kids. Absolutely. And they want to know what the kids are doing. And if it's an opportunity in a non-threatening situation to learn how to speak better, we should support it. Nice. But I also want to know, like, when we're going to open up these bilingual classes for the English language speakers, because I can't even tell you how many people are asking, how do I get my kid into that program?
Into the bilingual program.
They want their kids in a bilingual classroom.
You know, as we, the board is aware, we had examined that. I hate to say the P word, but when we're looking at the Princeton plan, that was one of the models that we were taking a look at. We're not yet at that saturation point where we have the population. In order to sustain a program like that, it doesn't have a value to us unless it can be sustained through the grades. And the way the trends seem to be based upon the demographic study that we had done, it's clear your fastest growing population in the district is the Hispanic Latino population. You know, a few years down the line from now, when we have population of 20 of Spanish speakers of ENL at each school where you're required to provide those bilingual programs, at that point, you might be able to take a look at some type of program that can lead into your middle school. But it's, it's in your purview to do that. I'll just, just explain to you that it would really be a large cost for us to try to, to get ourselves to that point.
Well, I'm being a little bit facetious. But
no, but there are districts.
You know,
if you look at the
Ossining, really
New Rochelle's, Tarrytown's, those programs are flourishing.
Yeah.
But you really have to have a very significant population of which you really don't have. 8%, while it's significant, it's rising. You're not at that level in order to be able to open up classes, to additional students.
And the irony is that if you're actually successful with the program, you start to have lesser ELL students at the further grades. So, which is why we only have a first grade, an elementary and first grade class, because that's where the concentration is. So, it's a bit of a dichotomy. Right? So, we'll see. Any other comments?
I just wanted to tag on to what Leanne said about grant money. Like, do we have the ability to look for private grant money from private foundations?
There was a time, years ago when the .com, where companies had money that, to burn, where grants like that were available to you. Those types of districts that are receiving those types of typically federal grants have extraordinary circumstances that make them eligible. We do examine and look at any opportunities we have for grant funding, but very often the district is ineligible just because we don't meet that level of criteria.
But if we spot like a small foundation, like not a state grant, but just a private family foundation that could potentially be a good fit, is it something that we have the ability to apply
for? You have the ability
to
accept, funding. Just point us in the direction where you think this money's coming from.
Well, I'm just saying, like, as a fundraiser, we're always looking at different grants, and every once in a while there will be a foundation that pops up, something that I happened to look at this morning. This is why I came into my head, that is a potentially good fit. So just, I will. If I see something that I think looks
certainly track
like
it down.
A potential fit, I'll...
But make sure that they can sustain us for a couple of years to go, because I think that's part of the problem, as Leanne says. You get the funding 1 year, 2 years, and then suddenly,
Well,
it's not there
foundations
anymore,
so you just got to reapply and try, and it's part of the whole process.
Fourth time.
Sometimes they're multi-year, sometimes they're single year, and you keep going. But it just sounds like such a great, you know, potential. These Saturday programs are more outside of the school, but I'm sure that takes time.
Sorry, James. Dan, Michael?
Just we have a lot of conversation about the bilingual classes. How are we? I understand the things that you were talking about some professional development for the teachers for some of the languages that are other than Spanish
and that's part of the professional development, because it's not just focusing. English language learner is not just focusing on the Latino population in particular. It's focusing on all students who do not have command of the English language. So when we do professional development, when I do professional development, it's catered towards all English language learners, not just the Latino population. So it's best practices for all students, actually.
But just by definition, we have classes where they're speaking Spanish, and we don't have classes where they're speaking Urdu.
Right, because it's not required. Not required.
Do we have the ability to translate for the Urdu?
We have companies that can come in and translate, because, in fact, if it's a child that is in a testing grade, they have to have someone that speaks Urdu and can translate the assessment for them.
Thank you.
So we do that currently? We do currently?
Not all assessments, just state assessments are required.
But do we bring in consultants or outside groups to help us with those students? So how do we
reach them? The student that speaks Urdu, she is not fluent. She speaks English as well.
Okay.
So if it becomes a circumstance where there's a student that just speaks Urdu, then we have to use best practices to help that child and help.
But to answer your question, in circumstances where we have to, in order for that child to take the assessment, what we look to do is bring a consultant in if we don't have a member on staff to be able to provide that service. And we always will look to BOCES first, so that if we can get a COSER, you know, type of agreement, that's our first avenue to do that.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Trustee Marshall.
So almost an obvious question. As the ENL population increases, you're seeing a parallel impact on your test scores at the elementary level? That's a question. Are you seeing that? And if so,
if the board recalled, when you look at our test performance and even high school graduation rates, you could see that population, particularly a population that also crosses over into economic disadvantage, is without question the biggest gap we have in terms of learning achievement in the district. And I'll share with you that the presence of Audrey, you can see tonight, get a sense of her knowledge base, her compassion, as well as the connections she's making with families, because very often these are families that don't feel they have a voice in our schools, mm-hmm. and are not as apt. And I'm very confident that we found the right person to lead this department, as well as to really have a presence in our community to help us with the growing population that we anticipate seeing in the district.
And refresh me just a little bit. We did have one school that was identified when we did the presentation on that, did we not?
The LAP schools, I think is what.
The middle school was.
The middle school, that's what I thought.
Yes. Yeah. And middle school and high school.
That's what I thought. Right. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan Jupiter.
I just wanted to thank you for your presentation and for helping us to address a growing critical component of our community, so that we can do our job, which is to provide a free and fair education to all our community members. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments? Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you. I wish you all.
Hold on a minute. I think we have a comment from. You do have to take the mic, John. For the record, this is John Vassa.
I just want to ask. I think you did an excellent job in your presentation. I have to give you a good mark on that. But my question is, since I'm a community coordinator, I'd like to know why you choose Liberty over the other two schools. You know, we have two elementary schools here, and you choose.
Yeah, John, that was done. The way it works, we draw from all of the other two populations. The reason why it's at Liberty is simply. No. But understand something. That question is my response, because I am the person that placed the program.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to find out is,
It's all about space. Liberty was the only school that had enough available space in it to house two classrooms for bilingual education.
Liberty is the only school that offers space.
Oh my. John, you're teasing the mic. John.
Give him the microphone. It's not at the expense of the other schools.
No, right. But then I'll go for a time. You know, I don't know the population of all the schools, but I think the school will kind of balance when it comes down to population wise. And I think from a diversity standpoint, I think they all just about the same too. But to choose one school over another school, you know, there had to be a different reason.
John, we did
space.
And said they have more space.
Yes, more space.
Something like that. Yeah, you should be able to make space anyway, you know.
Well, we don't have as much space as.
Let me just explain. Even though the program is housed at Liberty, there are students from Upper Nyack and Valley Cottage in that program. So these students are bused to Liberty. So even though it's housed at Liberty, it services students district wide. It's not just Liberty students.
You like her answer better.
Thank you very much.
My name is Walter Kahn. I'm from Nyack, a long-time Nyack resident here. And I graduated from Nyack High School class of 65. I'm an original man. But I noticed one thing. I got to agree with Mr. Vassar here. I was observing a meeting here intensively, and I noticed one thing. That apparently there's a lot going on that people don't understand. And even when you articulate it, they don't understand because you're talking way up here and we're way down here. So, in essence, what I'm trying to say, apparently what's going on in the community, the average layman out on the street doesn't know really what's going on in the school district, how it applies to their kids in the school. And all the changes that are being taken place, apparently you know because you're an expert and you're legal counsel, right?
I am.
Oh, what's?
I'm the superintendent of schools.
Oh, superintendent. Yeah. Wow. I didn't see that sign. Well, get more input in the community. In the school district, and apparently, there's a lot of things that are lacking that, certain things that apply to, people of, less fortunate, so to speak, in the community that's not being addressed. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to, find out what this is and correct these things. That's all I can say.
Well, first of all, appreciate your comments, and I would really welcome the opportunity at any time you want to stop in for a cup of coffee and we can have a longer conversation to inform me about some of the more particulars of some of those. That would be very helpful for all of us. So thank you.
Do we have a copy of the survey?
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Have a happy holiday.
Thanks again, Audrey. Very good. Thank you very much. Okay.
Yes, we have two additional workshop items. The first one is a third reading of Policy 1800, which is donations, gifts, grants to the district. You'll see that also under Action Item 3.4. If you recall from our last meeting, that was on, obviously, for second reading. We just cleaned up some of the language. It was really not significant to the content of the policy. Unless there's any questions, I think we can move right to the breathalyzer policy.
Is there any particular reason that $100,000 threshold is the threshold?
It was the only particular reason was what was recommended by New York school boards when they recommended their policy, okay. Just as a baseline.
Okay, thanks very much.
And the next reading, which is not on the action item, is the breathalyzer testing policy. I know there was a number of comments by board members, including our student representative, members of the public, Alaska around. Hunter did submit some suggested language that he was requesting the board consider. And at this point, I'll just open it up to the board to see, you know, where you folks are and your level of comfort in terms of moving this policy forward at some point.
Any comments from the board? Trustee Mark.
Only that Hunter's comments from the students are included here as we've seen them before. The breathalyzer policy that's attached on this agenda looks like it's the same policy as before. I mean, have we made any change? Are we reconsidering?
I did not make any changes from the last go around. I didn't really get in my mind a clear directive as to the board asking me to make any revisions. I know you were considering to listen to them, but and if so, I apologize because I might have misinterpreted.
Well, there were a couple of the points that the students made that I thought were things that should be given some consideration. The one, and I'm not getting them up here fast enough, but the one that I'm remembering particularly is just a discussion about the fact that if a student refuses to take the breathalyzer test, that he's automatically considered guilty and drunk.
What would you suggest? That they're innocent? I mean, I don't know. I'm not being facetious. I just don't know what you
right.
know,
well,
where you
I'm,
want to go
I'm
with
not
that.
100% sure that I have the answer, and that gave me pause to raise it. It's just that I thought that it's something that I thought that it deserves some discussion. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, currently, as you know, we don't apply the breathalyzer breathalyzer to students, and it's really based upon the evidence that the administrator on site, you know, in terms of the symptoms and so forth, conversations with the student, that makes a declaration whether that student they believe is, you know, under the influence or not in the absence of the breathalyzer. So in my mind, just in response, if they're, you know, first of all, if we put a clause in there that says that if you refuse to take it, I don't know what that means, but then it kind of negates the whole idea of even having a breathalyzer policy. I don't know really where, you know, it's almost as if you don't want to have the breathalyzer at all, which is fine.
Yeah, Trustee Marshall.
Or are you going to respond?
Go ahead. Okay. I'm trying to absorb
them. So a couple of things I think might be helpful. We have the podcast from when our student rep made the suggestions, and I recall two suggestions. One suggestion was, can we have two administrators instead of one, and another suggestion was they wanted to change the language if available. So it might be helpful, it would have been helpful, but even though it's not here now, the next, if we have to do, what is it, would it be a fourth reading at that point?
Yeah. Okay, so it was supplied to us, right?
It was.
So we had it, right? And I'll walk through them.
Oh, you have it?
Yeah.
It was in your update.
I
listed all those.
So the point is that Dr. Montesano didn't include them because we did not ask him to, we didn't take any sort of vote or action for him to include them. So what he's done, it's in the update that we got. So he has sent them in the update for our consideration for inclusion or modification.
Gotcha.
In it. Now, if you don't feel that you have the time or you don't have it and you want to study it some more, we will go to a fourth read. And there's no rush on this, but we have the information. Okay. Yeah, it's in the board update.
Okay. Right.
So, do you need some time to review this, or? But we should walk through it because it's not a matter of just throw them all in. So, for instance, the question around, I didn't mean it like that. We have to think carefully. So, to Michael's point, you know, the point about some people also feel that the fact that a student might refuse to take a test means they will be considered insubordinate, and the test deemed positive. Is not completely fair to some that do not want to take the test for privacy reasons. Is there another way to approach this? And I'm of the same mind as Dr. Montesano. I'm not really sure what we would do to modify that, because you defeat the whole purpose, as he said, of the breathalyzer.
Because
if everybody refuses, then what?
The premise is, right, that you're administering the test to somebody who has some displayed symptoms that's
correct.
Giving you cause to believe that they're under the influence. So you're not going to just do that to somebody that's not displaying symptoms. You're going to do it to somebody that you have reasonable belief to say that they're intoxicated or something.
Okay.
So the fact that they're denying taking the test is simply
putting they're under suspicion anyway. It's not like it's newsflash, you know, I don't know why I'm being tested. You're being tested because there's a reasonable suspicion. So if you're not giving them the author the ability to discern objectively whether you are intoxicated or not, they're presuming that you are. So the fact that, you know, I understand the concern that if you don't take it, you're deemed guilty, but you basically are deemed guilty anyway because you've been demonstrating symptoms that have caused someone to want to administer a breathalyzer to you in the first place. As opposed to, like, the example I sent around to the board. I was watching the news the other day about a school in New Jersey where they had authorized a breathalyzer policy, and I sent a note to everybody that made the news, and Dr. Montesano wrote back to me and said, that school breathalyzes everybody. So,
Random.
Right?
It's
so,
random, yeah.
In that particular instance, you could have a student who would object to being breathalyzed and was not intoxicated. But in our school, in this under this policy, you're not being asked to be breathalyzed unless you're actually demonstrating symptoms, leading someone to believe that there's a problem anyway.
All right.
Does
Thank
that
you.
Make sense?
Yeah. Michael, you brought that up. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you have a suggestion about how you'd want that rewarded?
I brought it up because it was of some concern to me. I didn't have enough consideration to bring you another suggestion, but
okay.
It is something that to me merits some consideration. I'm not my usual prepared self to discuss why. Which
Any
is not very helpful.
Okay, that's okay. Any other comments on that particular point, Dan, Doctor?
Just to number two of Hunter's points was to avoid administrator bias towards specific students.
That I think we can.
You feel that at least two administrators should have to observe at least one indicator. I don't have a problem with have some kind of language that has an additional administrator.
Would agree.
I don't think at least two, because that even connotes three or four, but certainly there could be two.
Two. Yeah.
In my opinion,
I was comfortable with that.
It's possible.
The only caveat is that I would really wish that if the board considers adding that language, that it also qualifies it where possible. And I say that because there are certain events where if we bring two administrators into a secluded area, there may not be anybody else left supervising the other students because we don't always have that many chaperones. Mm-hmm. And the only, you know, and certainly I think I understand the merits of it, but keep in mind the idea of the breathalyzer, in my opinion, is that right now it's relatively a subjective, declaration that administration makes, and the breathalyzer is the most objective vehicle we have, meaning regardless of if it's perceived that the administrator has a vendetta against another student or something and wants to find the student guilty, the breathalyzer policy is simply objective. It's scientific in terms of its. I know Trustee Mark has made this point on other occasions where we want to make sure the student that's involved is comfortable, is not made extra anxious because there's an administrator that, you know, for whatever reason, don't have that level of comfort with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I do know it's not all of our events, so we are always going to be able to allocate, you know, two additional administrators for that task.
Just as an addition, I would want to make sure, before we did anything like that, to change that policy, to change the proposal, that we hear from administration at the high school themselves about how they feel about that.
Yeah.
We're making it here in this vacuum. I'd want to know what their thoughts are before we embark on that.
Yeah.
And I did send that same Hunter's suggestions up, and certainly represented that these aren't just Hunter's. I want to qualify. This was as a result of him working with other students and what his fact finding was. But I did send it up to Principal Saiba to look at and comment. I have not yet, got back anything. So, it doesn't appear the board's going to be voting tonight, so you'll have an ample time for a fourth reading to kind of review that.
Okay. Other points?
I guess the one reflection I would have in my inadequate addressing of this thing is if the student refuses to take the test, I don't have a problem with them being considered insubordinate. But I do have a problem with them saying that the test is then deemed positive because they haven't been tested.
Maybe the language is inappropriate. The student's being declared that he's under the influence. Now, whether it's a declaration of the test itself, I mean, that language can certainly be altered. But you know, it's of our opinion that of a student that has been demonstrating signs and symptoms, refuses to take the breathalyzer, it would be logical to say, yes, we're going to declare, much like we do now, you know, that you're, we believe you're under the influence.
Well, I guess that would help me to not say that the test is positive. From my professional experience as an administrator and past experience in this kind of situation, you're not taking the test, you're insubordinate, and by my judgment, you're under the influence, even though you haven't taken the test. And whatever action gets taken because of that is would be appropriate.
So you just want the test deemed positive to be phrased differently? Because you are saying the same thing, you just said it differently.
No, I'm saying a different thing. The test is not deemed positive because he hasn't taken the test. The test, I would say it should say, if you refuse to take the test,
you need to be an insubordinate.
We can consider you insubordinate, and with the benchmarks that we have used in the past before you took the test, we're still considering you under the influence. I don't know what difference that makes in terms of what consequences might be.
It's
more accurate.
Yeah. No, I get you.
Okay. Consequences for being insubordinate. Gotcha.
I mean,
does that make a difference to you?
Yeah, you should.
Hunter?
Could we get him the mic?
He needs the mic.
I mean, that was one of the biggest things brought up. I don't know if it was because of that language that the student would be deemed as having a positive test, but I think just changing that language would help a lot of students that have that concern, if that makes sense.
It's the same effect.
So they would be considered insubordinate and under the influence?
That sounds better than a positive test to me, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that is the conclusion of the administrators that is leading to them needing to do the test. So by default, if you won't take the test, we stand by the fact that we deem you to be under the influence.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound?
Yeah.
And I'm not a lawyer. Would that work, Hunter?
Yeah, that would work.
All right, so if we could get that language in and see where that goes. Yeah? All right. Number one, we feel that some of the indicators are vague, such as flush face, reliable statements made by third parties, and other observations generally associated with being under the influence of alcohol. Vague in what sense?
So those are indications that are used now.
Yeah. So not sure what we would change this to be. Well, which one of these are vague? Are they finding all of them vague?
You mean out of the three you just mentioned, or the...
Yeah, so the flush face, reliable statements made by third parties, and other observations generally associated with being under the influence.
Right.
Do they have an issue with any particular
one? There are, just to be clear, there's about a dozen indicators that are listed in the policy.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, and that's really consistent with what we have now. Mm-hmm. And I'm honestly just hard-pressed to know. I'd be curious to see what the students might be recommending to us that would be less vague than, you know, these to me are not very vague at all. They're very consistent with what medical science tells us what a individual would demonstrate if they are under the influence of alcohol. So I would just ask this, you know, Hunter if he has any, you know, not tonight, you may not have it, but I don't know what else we're considering or what they're suggesting we take out or include in.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that I can speak about is the one that says reliable statements made by a third party. I know the concern with that one is what can be considered a third party. Like if one student walks up to an administrator and says, I know for a fact that student has been drinking, go give them a breathalyzer. Would that be considered a reliable statement by a third party?
Yeah. I mean, you know, right now, to be honest, Hunter, you know, that scenario you gave us, it would give cause of suspicion for our administrator to bring that student aside and ask questions, and during that interview might smell alcohol, may not. But if that was the only indicator in that circumstance, right now I don't think that student would be brought aside and accused of, you know, under the influence. And I don't, And I think this might be to your point, that if that is the only indicator, and an administrator that you're not you personally, but are not comfortable with, you may defer by the policy and say, I'd like another, you know, a second opinion, if you will. Because that's not my understanding of the way we have worked our policy as it currently stands. And again, I want to remind everyone that over the past 4 years, we've had a total of 16, I won't say confirmed, but students that have been fallen and have been disciplined and counseled as a result of our existing alcohol policy. My point being is that I don't see this as, you know, we're not out there hunting. We're obviously want to be cognizant of students. And the other thing I've noticed is that we've had a diminished, you know, less students over the last 2 years than we had the previous 2 years in terms of this policy. So I don't think we would see a situation based on just a singular indicator. That's not typically what we see. Most of the kids probably demonstrate multiple indicators that gives us reason and cause to say, you know, let's take the student aside.
Right. Okay. Can I ask about a different section?
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the discrete location section, I know I brought it up last month, mm-hmm. and that was the number one thing that was brought up to me when we were going around asking about this policy, especially because at BOCES or McCalman Field, there really is no discrete location right now. And I know that with the new facilities being built that there will be, but I'm just wondering what would happen if this went into place next year.
I'll just, you know, certainly anyone that wants to comment, but I'll just inform you that, you know, of those 16, if my mind is working in recalling correctly, I believe we had about 7 of those students that were fallen victim to the policy were at football games, you know, that we had this at McCalman Field. And those students have been taken aside and, you know, questioned. And, you know, currently, I think the only difference I would see is that, you know, the breathalyzer, which, by the way, we haven't even selected if the board was to go forward. Modern technology even has breathalyzers that are very discreet in themselves. They're almost handheld without even having to blow into them. You can even just kind of put them on through a wand. It's conceivable that we could work something out at the building itself. We certainly have access to the building, you know, during that, even to take that student, you know, into the building itself so they're away from the crowd and not visible. I think all of us can appreciate the concern the students are expressing that, you know, if it's done and administered in the presence, you know, even if we went behind the stands, you know, kids can get up and look, and you don't want to have that kind of a situation occur. So I think what I would probably do is speak with Joe Sigillo and Mr. Heaton just to see if we can secure a location at that building where that, you know, that could take place.
So we'd need to factor that into any events we're planning that are not at our buildings, to factor in, okay, the risk of alcohol and if the situation arises.
Yeah, I mean, but having said that, you know, keep in mind, you know, it's not a secret when we call a student out of the crowd and say, look, come on, you know, follow me. So, the only difference is, as I see it, is that, you know, the primary difference with the new policy versus the current policy is the actual device itself. And that may, you know, I can understand a desire for students that's not administered, so it, you know, it flashes and says you're positive in front of everybody. but I'm pretty confident we could probably locate and secure some kind of location in which that can be arranged. I'm just not sure exactly where it would be, but my thinking is right into the high school building itself, the old high school. Mm-hmm.
I was more thinking events at other locations. I don't know that.
Well, you know, keep in mind this policy is not only specific to your school campus. You know, it's conceivable that a student can be on a trip, you know, right, to the Bronx Zoo, and we would have a cause to administer
the
policy.
But Jim, that's my point, is that if you're going to go to the Bronx Zoo, and that may be a probability, you've got to have a number of the chaperones think, okay, if I have an incident like this, what will I do? Right? So I'm just saying that it's one of these things now they've got to think about just ahead of time, right? Because you don't want to be caught in the situation where, all right, I want to breathalyze, but I can't, or I do, and
you know, next thing you have a lawsuit, because it's like, well, we did this, or we did that. So I don't want to make, it's a storm in a teacup, maybe, but I just think that...
No, listen, by the way, in my mind, just my own experience, having, you know, served as superintendent for about 18 years, the further away from your building, and including overnight trips your students go, the higher the probability your students are under the influence of alcohol. So I really, we really would have to ensure, as we do now, that, you know, these your policy as it currently exists, not just the alcohol, but substance abuse as well, is always carried out at any location that we're in. Okay. The only difference here, in my mind, is that when we have travelers, we're going to have to ensure we have the device on hand for that chaperone to be able to to be able to utilize.
And be aware that they need to think through those circumstances. Yeah. Because, listen, we had the kids go off to London the other day. We had those kids in Prague. So we got the kids traveling a fair bit. You know, the Red Storm Band was up in Syracuse. Right. So there's a fair bit to consider. I just would like to make sure that the chaperones are prepped, both in terms of the use and around these sort of sensitivities. So they've got to understand the policy fully so they don't violate it when they have to either execute this or whatever it is they need to do around this. So James Marshall.
Would a chaperone be in a position, not being an administrator, to administer the device? A, and then I heard Trustee Jucker say to add to the extent possible. Because when you're going to an offsite event, it would be to the extent possible.
But I was thinking, when I say chaperone, I'm thinking
school
chaperone.
Location if available.
Right, available.
Yeah, but when I say chaperone, I'm thinking...
You're thinking admin.
Yeah, because we always have, with these trips, there's always a member, staff member or admin who goes on these trips. Is that
we don't always have an administrator or dean on these trips, no. The case in point is the trips up to Syracuse, it's your band directors, and... Ralph is just kind of scanning, but I think our policy is that it must be administered by an administrator.
Yep. Can't be a parent.
That's going to be a problem.
Can't be a parent.
Yeah. T-Rock.
I guess something for us to consider would be possibly looking at the breathalyzer policy, but having a way to revert to the existing policy so that you can account for times when you don't have a breathalyzer.
Or able to administer.
I'm just going through my mind a scenario. You know, right now where we've had situations, and actually I'm thinking about one in particular that I think had to do more with substance abuse than alcohol. And what happens, what chaperones do in any kind of atypical event is immediately contact the building principal, and let them know, along with the children's parents, as to what's happening. Our typical protocol, if there's any doubt, is to have the parents come up to where the trip is and take the child home if there's a concern. So I'll have to really think a little bit more about this, but the way the policy, I think, is written, we would probably not have the breathalyzer administered by a staff member. And it would revert to the way we currently do things in terms of the evidence that we gain and so forth by that.
Yeah.
On page 2 of the policy, it says that it could be administered by the administrator or other trained staff person in the presence of a witness.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, it does.
Because the other side of the coin is they don't have to administer the breathalyzer, right? If somebody's just keeling over and is so obviously drunk that they can't even stand up to take the test. And
well, in those circumstances, our concern is really medical.
It's medical, know, right. Medical, so it's like, someone who looks like they're suffering from alcohol poisoning, you're going to want to get them to the hospital. You're not even going to breathalyze the person, right? So this isn't even something that...
Right.
This is really for those, few circumstances we've had where there's this, not clear understanding as to what's happening at this event. Do we have a situation where a student is and again, the idea is, as the board is aware, there's a number of things I think the board was interested in, and the well-being of the student was really primary in terms of making sure that if that child is underage and drinking, we want to make sure the appropriate counseling is being provided so that, and the parents are made aware.
I just want to go back to the last meeting where it was pointed out by Principal Saiva. This is an additional tool, and some of these can be taken into consideration. So not to overthink it or underthink it, but that The administrators, I think, are going to use their best discretion. I don't think you're going to account for every single scenario. So I think, you know, that they will use their discretion, but this is something that that I have, obviously they support. I think we might want to look at 1, 2, 3, and 4 and see what to take out and what to leave in and what's going to work, and then, you know, move forward. But,
let me try to, if it is approved by, you know, you think this is a good idea, is work out some of this language, get it prepared for you for the next meeting, which will be the January meeting. That will also give me time to work with Principal Saib, also with Hunter, to get some input from those parties, so that when we present it to you, you'll know where everybody stands, you know, in terms of its level of support, and obviously from your perspective, as if it's something you want to include in your policy.
I like that idea. Hunter, would that work for you?
Yeah, that would work.
It would work. Yeah. Board members?
Good.
Yeah. Well, I was.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. You had a comment?
Yeah, I just had a comment. I mean, I'm not going to say much tonight, but I spoke. Terrence, you weren't there yet, but I spoke pretty extensively at the last board meeting that, after giving this a lot of thought and speaking to a lot of community members, I really am not in support of the policy anymore. I completely respect everyone's opinion, and I believe that I am probably, you know, it seems like the majority is going the other direction. But I said a lot about my reasons for just feeling like I'd prefer not to have a breathalyzer policy. So I'm not contributing much to the conversation about changing language, because I just thought I, you know, if you want to listen to the podcast, it's all on there from last week, but just wanted to mention that.
Okay. Then, Doctor.
Jen, I just want to make sure you understand that because some of us are asking for clarification and for the policy to be written a certain way, does not in any way imply that one is for or against. So to make that presumption is not, it's premature.
Got it. All right. Yes, I don't want to make any presumptions. Sorry. I just, I figured that I said everything last week. I didn't want to start going into it all again. I know you all heard
me. Can
I
finish?
Got it, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I think it's important. I've had a lot of community input to me about the idea that this is somehow an additional punishment. And I think it's really important to understand that there is not a single punishment in this policy, this proposal. The punishment is the result of a consequence of the, and what's listed in the code of conduct. So this actually isn't a punishment vehicle, it's an identification vehicle. And very clearly also, police officers will not be involved in the administration of the breathalyzer test by school officials. So it's not even a police action in any way, shape, or form. I just want to make sure that's on the public podcast, because there are some misconceptions that those two things are happening and they're not. But thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Mm-hmm. Any other comments?
I agree with his point. I think that perception is out there. And I do want to also reiterate that the students overwhelmingly, at least according to Hunter, they do support it, they just want to see some changes.
Right. Most students do support it, right. But they're supporting just it be with changes that want to be made. They made the point that as it is, they want to see those changes made, or else they won't be in support of that.
Okay.
If I could go more into detail about that if you want me to.
No, I think that's what Dr. Montesano will try and solicit from you.
Yeah.
So if you could make sure that we get as much input from the students as possible, Dr. Montesano will pull that all together, and as he said, we'll get as many of these changes in for consideration in the for another reading in the January timeframe. Okay. All right. Enjoying yourself, Tim?
This is a blast.
Wonderful. So you'll be back next time.
I'm coming back.
All right. Now let's move on. Thank you, Dr. Montesano. Okay, so we'll move on to action items general. Are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on the action items? No? Okay. So for action item 3.2, could I get a nomination from the floor BOE Vice President Dan Jupter?
I'd like to nominate Leanne Irvin for the position of Vice President.
Okay, it's a nomination.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I vote for myself. Aye.
You can vote for yourself.
Abstain? Motion carries.
Yes.
So we have to, sorry. Aye, discussion. Was there commentary?
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Nope.
Okay.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Motion carries. Leanne Irvin is our new BOE Vice President.
Thank you, everybody. I will endeavor to fulfill the office with great respect and aplomb, and I look forward to working with the President.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have a motion to accept action items 3.3 to 3.4.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Do you have a motion to accept the library vote action 3.5?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Abstain? Please note for the record that Trustee Jukta has opposed action item 3.5, the library vote and polling place. Motion carries. Dr. Montesano, anything on business that you would like to highlight?
No. Just simply, we do certainly want to thank the NIAC Tower Fund for that donation, which will be used for our architect to now begin to develop plans for that, you know, tower that was mentioned earlier. So we certainly want to thank them for all their fundraising efforts.
Thank you, Dr. Montesano. Do you have a motion to accept business items, action items 4.1 through 4.7?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstained? Motion carries. Dr. Montesano, anything on the personnel?
There really is not. Just a quick note that the reason you had pointed Jeannie Maldonado at the last meeting for a new position in the district, and we just received the resignation letter, which is why it wasn't on together. Usually they're coupled together, so I just wanted to point that out.
Okay. Thank you.
She's not resigning from a position.
Thanks
resigning
for the clarification. Oh.
See, that was a question. Several people had a question.
Do we have a motion to accept action items 5.1 through 5.7?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Motion.
Motion. We are adjourned. Thank you all.